Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 113 of the History Hotline. My name is Deanna Lynn Cook and as always I'll be your host today. Now today's episode will be somewhat reflective. There's been quite a few reflective episodes in the past. I really enjoy doing them actually. It's quite nice to essentially think out loud. But it will be reflections on the Windrush 75 quote unquote celebrations that have been going on for the past 2 weeks in some cases, or a week in the kind of intensity, and I'm sure we'll be carrying on over the next few weeks as well. And I kind of wanted to do an episode that reflects on the impact of some of those celebrations and conversations that are occurring, as well as bringing in a few updates from past episodes where things I've been speaking about, whether that be in the case of Child Q or in the Stephen Lawrence episodes, or in the Windrush scandal episodes, which are obviously more recent. You know, there have been updates and things have happened that I wanted to talk about in this episode today. And this episode, in a kind of mishmash way, will hopefully bring all these themes together and also draw to a close. It's not really a season of the History Hotline, but we're having a pause. We're having a summer holiday. So this will be the last episode for a while. I think episodes will resume towards the end of August, the start of September, just when school goes back into session. And that will give me some time to have a break from the History Hotline. It won't give me any time to have a break from history because I definitely still do a PhD. But it will be a chance for me to kind of read some more, take in some more content, topics, and just broaden my historical knowledge, because the kind of the wealth and the breadth of Black British history that exists, and Caribbean history, if we want to bring that in as well, is immense. You know, these aren't just like really small histories where there's only a few topics. There's so much to potentially talk about. And someone's asked me before if I think I'll ever run out of episodes, and that's literally not possible. Like, I think this podcast would have to be going for decades for me to run out of episodes, because there's so many ways to frame history. So even if you take one historical event or person or organization, there's so many angles at which you could come at that topic that it kind of leads to infinity episodes, which means that the History Hotline will be going on forever. So that's not a bad thing. All that being said, if you are sitting here listening to this episode thinking, why doesn't she do an episode about beep, fill in the blank, then now's your time. Please feel free to send recommendations. I know people have sent recommendations in the past, and if you have and I haven't done it yet, it's because I'm still reading. I promise I haven't forgotten any of the recommendations I've had in the past. There's a long list, but if you do have any other episode recommendations or topics you'd like to hear more about, or things that you've kind of heard in passing and you know you want a deeper exploration, or if you'd like an update on any episodes or a different angle maybe for something that I've already spoken about here, then please feel free to send your requests in. You can send them by email, thehistoryhotline@gmail.com, or on social media, Instagram at The History Hotline, Twitter at The History HL. You can catch me on LinkedIn. I think that's about it really for me and the podcast. But you know, if you do have any requests, please do send them my way as I do my reading for the next batch of episodes over 2023 and 2024. Also, if you have any one that you think is doing interesting research within the field of Black British or Caribbean history that you'd like to see or hear here on this podcast, then please do send me their names, send me their content. I'd love to speak to more people doing this work, you know, doing Black British and Caribbean history, to talk to them about their research, or, you know, people that were present at some of the events that I've spoken about that aren't so far back within history. I would love to sit down and talk to those people. So, yeah, if you can think of anybody, send them my way, connect me with them. I would really appreciate that. I'd love to interview more people on this podcast, as well as sharing the histories that I have been doing for the past nearly 3 years. So our first topic of today's episode is, of course, Windrush 75th anniversary of the arrival of the Windrush, which was a ship that carried a large number of West Indian migrants to Britain after World War II. It wasn't the first ship, it wasn't the second, it's probably something like the third or fourth. And it is marked with, as a kind of symbolic start of those migrations. In the last two episodes, which were about the Windrush scandal, I was kind of suggesting that, really, is there anything to celebrate? You know, should we be in a mood or in a mode of celebration when so many people that were impacted by the Home Office, their racism, their mismanagement, their ill handling, their general inefficiency and absolute abhorrent treatment of human beings, you know, should we be celebrating in the midst of that when we know there are so many people that lives have been absolutely destroyed by it, who still haven't received compensation, who still haven't received adequate support to help them out of the situations they were put in? So that was a kind of theme of the past two episodes. And, well, I'm not going to say I've changed my mind, because I haven't, but I was very fortunate to speak at the National Windrush Museum's conference, and I spoke about some of the research I had done on West Indian women during World War II in the ATSC, Auxiliary Territorial Service, which I've done episodes on before. So in doing that, I was in a lot of conversations and in a lot of rooms where the theme was of celebration. You know, this conference was for Windrush 75. And I think, I wouldn't say I was convinced by this idea that, you know, we should be solely celebrating. And I don't actually think anyone is actually suggesting that, apart from maybe the British government. But it was very clear that whilst we had to remember and understand this scandal, it was also okay to celebrate, for me, my grandparents' generation, for some their great-grandparents, their parents, and celebrate their lives, essentially, not necessarily their contribution or, you know, what they've done for England, but just to celebrate their lives and the legacies they've left for us, even on a personal level. So I think I used that time, that space, to think about my grandparents and think about the people I know of that generation in my community that have really shaped the area I live in, my house, my outlook on life, and so many other things. So it was nice to actually think, whilst I'm still a very cynical person, especially when it comes to Home Office affairs, it was nice to have a little bit more of a positive spin on Windrush 75. However, this didn't last very long. It didn't last very long because Britain was doing what it does best: tokenism and empty platitudes, coins and stamps. Last year, it was statues. This year, coins and stamps. See, now I feel like I'm having the same conversation, literally sat in the same seat, because I record the podcast in the same place. And this time last year, I think I made a whole episode about what was the point of a Windrush statue, and was it just an empty gesture? And here I am, 365-ish days later, asking the same question, you know, are these stamps and coins just another empty gesture? And I just feel like it's shocking to me that it's the same thing again and again. And I don't know why I'm shocked, because it's clear that, you know, this country doesn't really do much more than that. But yeah, episode 81, Windrush Monument, empty gesture, The newly erected monument at Waterloo train station to honour the Windrush generation was put up, and I don't know if we were supposed to really celebrate it, but it was most definitely an empty political gesture. And now we have stamps. Now, again, as I said when it came to the statue, this is not to critique the artist, the sculptor in that statue episode. And in this case, there were 5 black British artists, all of Caribbean heritage, which I think is beautiful. Kareen Cox, Bakiba, Tamika George, Alvin Kofi and Emma Prempe. 3 of them designed 2 stamps, and then I think the other designed just the 1. And, you know, this is not a critique of them. The stamps are actually beautiful, and I was not annoyed that they were beautiful, because of course they would be. You know, they've selected really talented artists to do that. And I think it's really nice, the things that they've included in these stamps. They've obviously got like an image of the Windrush ship, and in the forefront of that image is a woman. And I'm really happy about that, because the Pathé newsreel of 1948, when the Windrush arrives, is such a male dominated visual, even orally. You don't hear from any woman. No woman speaks in that. The visuals pretty much all pan to men and allude to them being all ex-servicemen, when there were ex-servicewomen on the ship as well, which is what my talk was about the other day. You know, it shows teachers, which is, you know, important in my own family history. There's cricketers. There are individuals holding up placards, marching, essentially probably representing the struggle, as well as the joy of them playing steel pans and being part of carnival and being in the market and dancing. And, you know, I think it really beautifully captures the essence of that generation and some of the things that they went through and the legacy they've left for us. So this is not a critique of the art or the artist or anything like that. It's just sometimes I wish the energy that went into things like this went into also reparations, as a wider concept for people of the Windrush generation, but also in wider conversations, which I don't think this podcast is going to talk about today. We're not going to talk about wider conversations about reparations through because of enslavement or colonialism, but we definitely could, and we have. But yeah, I just feel like it's a bit of an empty gesture once again. But artists were commissioned, and they were of Caribbean descent, and it's kind of a nice legacy moment and something to, I guess, remember the year by, in a sense. And I quite like the idea that it's stamps as well, because that generation in my family anyway like to write a letter, and they were writing letters back home, they were receiving letters from back home, and you know, that was a way they communicated. And so, you know, to kind of have their story on a stamp in the way that they would have communicated with back home and kept the memories that they had of home alive and that kind of thing, is quite a nice thing. But again, I'm calling it an empty gesture. Sorry. And now on to the coin. There's a 50p coin, a new 50p with Windrush Generation 75. And again, a descendant of that generation.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
From the Caribbean, Velda Jackson was commissioned to design, she designed them, and then those designs were selected for the coin, which depicts 2 people of the Windrush generation dressed smartly, standing together. It looks like a man and his wife, or one could assume, and then the backdrop is of a Union Jack flag, and it's supposed to represent pride and belonging. And yeah, it's just interesting that the Royal Mint had the time, the money to print coins, but they didn't have the coins to give to those who needed compensation. So that one for me is just not really making sense, but nothing makes sense because it's just an empty gesture. So why would it make sense? But again, this isn't at all critique of the design that was chosen, the artists that have done that design. It is just of the fact that, once again, it seems like we have an empty gesture with actually no real move to do anything to support the people that really need supporting financially after this scandal. I was very shocked to see an article that was speaking about a senior Metropolitan Police officer apologising for the trauma that was caused to child Q. Now, if you remember back in 2022, I believe, if you remember back to episode 69, Child Q and the Adultification of Black Girls, I spoke about a case that had come up from 2020 of a 15-year-old young girl who was strip searched at school after being wrongly suspected of carrying drugs. And I won't go into much more than that with this part of the episode, but 3 years on, Child Q has actually spoken out for the first time in an updated report into the incident. And Detective Chief Superintendent James Conway, in response, and I quote, said, "The experience of Child Q should never have happened, and I am sorry for the trauma that we caused her. I'm also sorry it took an event like this to highlight that we were overusing this type of strip search on children. Now, I'm sorry that it's taken you that long to actually acknowledge that and apologise. And I'm even more annoyed that it's a report that's taken this kind of response, you know, not the actual case itself. And yes, there were apologies made at the time, but for somebody with authority within the Met to come out and actually acknowledge the failings, which I'm sorry, that sounds institutional to me, institutional failings, but we don't really like big words like institutional racism or institutional failings or systemic issues, even though it's very clear that's what that is here. And hopefully there will be further conversations about A, the removal of this kind of procedure in schools, B, the removal of police from schools, and C, the over-policing of black children more broadly. I think we might get A. It's unlikely we'll see B, and C seems impossible to me at this stage. But that was an update within that case from an episode that came out in March 22. And the next thing I wanted to speak about was, this feels so strange to say this, I don't know if update's the right word, but an update in the Stephen Lawrence case. Who would have thought 30 years after Stephen Lawrence was murdered, that a sixth suspect named Matthew White would be named by the Met following the publication of an investigation. White died 2 years ago, aged 50, and so cannot be held to account, cannot be brought to justice, cannot answer for what he's being accused of, or, you know, whether he was there or not. It will be based on whatever evidence is available. And, you know, it's just, it just says so much, doesn't it, that this family have had to fight so long and so hard to just, like, get the scraps of a semblance of justice. It's ridiculous. And again, it just really shows the failings of the Met. And it's just such an infuriating situation that they have covered up that, which I believe they have. This is me speaking on opinion here, not fact, but, you know, they've clearly knew who he was. And it's only now that this is all being released after his death, which is very convenient. Dwayne Brooks, who was with Stephen Lawrence when he was killed, always said there was a sixth person, which I didn't actually talk about in the episode that I did on the Stephen Lawrence 30 years on. But he's always said that there were six people when it was only five people whose names were mentioned in investigations and inquiries. Baroness Doreen Lawrence has, of course, called for serious sanctions against those Met officers who have failed to investigate the murder adequately or in any way, really, because this infuriating revelation is clearly just another step in the failings of this force. And I just don't think that this is the end. I don't think that this will be the last we hear of this story or investigation. Imagine if this was investigated properly in the beginning. Like, just imagine the difference. You know, unfortunately, this family would have still lost their son. Friends would have lost a friend. But the difference in this case and the difference in the handling of it, how, like, you know, much less harrowing that would have been for her family. And, you know, I assume that officers that might have been part of this investigation in its initial stages 30 years ago may not even be alive now. You know, if they were, I don't know, 50s, 60s, 70s at that point, senior officials within the Met might not be here now. So there is also that. And, you know, Matthew White first came to police attention when Stephen Lawrence was killed in 1993. And he was a witness at that point. And he told officers he'd visited the home address of two of the suspects on the night of Stephen's murder, linking him to two suspects. And then he was again seen by police when he refused to attend the Stephen Lawrence inquiry. During the post-inquiry investigation in 1999, he was re-interviewed. He was arrested and interviewed in March 2000. And in December 2013, a file was submitted to prosecutors in May 2005 and October 2014. And on both occasions, the CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service, basically said that there was no kind of realistic way that he would be convicted for any offence. So you can see, you know, he's not just some random person that's popped up in the story 30 years later. He was being questioned at every stage of investigations by the Met, let alone he's still been allowed to get away with this and die without facing any kind of justice. So yes, it's clear that, you know, the Met still a very long way away from any kind of positive change, shall we say, especially when it comes to institutional racism. There were a few other things I wanted to briefly touch on but not say too much about, because I'll be honest, I'm just a bit underread when it comes to the topics. But stop and search being ramped up, which we know disproportionately impacts black boys, black men, and the idea that this is going to help prevent crime, when we know that it doesn't, and actually remedying the reasons that people take part in criminal activity would probably be more of an effective approach. It was an approach taken in Scotland many years ago, looking at things like poverty and class, as opposed to always singling out race when it comes to crimes that are knife crime related, drugs crime related. It's like the fingers being pointed straight at black people. Like, you know, you are the proponents of it, so you must be stopped and searched way more times. So yeah, there's that coming from the high-ups in government, that needs to be ramped up. There is also the fact that Suella Braverman has disbanded the Windrush Home Office task force, which was looking into compensation. And we also have claims of further deportations of people of the Windrush generation who have mental health issues and diagnoses. And there have been incidences where they have been deported. Now, kind of brings us full circle back to the topic we started on, and the tokenistic endeavours of stamps and coins, when we have stories coming out in the same week of people of that generation being deported. And so, you know, it kind of leaves me to think about where we are at this point, at the start of 2023. And whilst, I'd say, the provision of Black British history is a lot better than when I started in 2020. I don't know how many people knew or could, you know, talk through stories of the Windrush generation and really understand some of the nuances of that story. Maybe There are some people that still can't, and that's okay. The learning continues, but I think the amount that's available now when it comes to history, as just a member of the public wanting to pick up a book or listen to a podcast, hint, hint, or watch a YouTube video or something of that nature, you know, I think it is a lot easier to do that now. So whilst there are positive changes, and there have been positive effects of having something like Windrush Day and thinking about the post-war migrations of Caribbean people, there are obvious, very, very obvious issues with that, and it does have a problematic tone to it when the kind of most substantial things that are being done are new coins and stamps. But I will leave this episode here and draw this kind of season. It's not a season because I don't really start the numbers again. Like, we don't do that. Oh, season 3, episode 1. It's going to be episode 114 again when I'm back towards the end of August. So I just wanted to say thank you for listening. Thank you for all your support over the last year or so when I took the last break. It was June 2022. And for sharing these episodes, for telling your friends, your family members to tune in, for supporting my work more broadly outside the podcast as well. I am really, really grateful, and I couldn't do it without you, and I wouldn't do it without you. So thank you all so much, and I hope you continue listening. And now if you've missed episodes, you've got a chance to catch up. You've got a few weeks, so do enjoy. Have a wonderful week. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the History Hotline. To continue the conversation, follow us on social media at the History Hotline on Instagram and at the History HL on Twitter. The History Hotline is hosted by Deanna Lynn Cook. Research is done by Zaki Arias.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.